This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Welcome to an extra edition of our films podcast. This week I met Tom Hanks to talk about his latest movie, Charlie Wilson's War. And I began, because it seemed only polite to do so, by asking him how he was doing.
I'm very good. Great to be here on the BBC. It's marvellous.
Well, now, look, I've just come back from New Hampshire, where I went to see your movie. I flew to New Hampshire. Then went to New Hampshire. And the first thing I did when I went to Concord is I went to the Regal Plaza Cinema, Screen 8.
Screen 8. Oh, geez, only 8?
Screen 8.
You know, there's actually
a hierarchy.
Out of 36. And that's not so bad, because there's a hierarchy of what screen you're playing in.
But that's terrific. But to see it with an audience full of Americans is a different experience, because they get a whole bunch of the jokes that I didn't get.
What didn't you get? I'll explain.
Well, no, I think there was some other... Well, the stuff that they laughed at the most, and this is the trivia question, and Mark Kermode is here, by the way, as well.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Which... Okay, this is the trivia question. Which of the current crop of presidential candidates is... not in it, but referred to in Charlie Wilson's War?
Giuliani.
Yeah, it's only because I told you outside.
No, it's because you asked me outside and I told you what the answer was.
We had a reference to McCain in it too, but we took it out. Because it turns out the Charlie Wilson has the second most demerits in the history of the U.S. Naval Academy. Meaning he was the second most punished sailor to go through it. You know who has the most demerits?
No.
John McCain.
Really, yeah, truly?
Still on fact. He was a wild man, wild man. Which means, hey, I was a Republican, he'd have my vote based on that fact alone.
Right, but you're not. So anyway, let's...
What do you mean by that? Yeah.
Have you switched?
No. Is this an exclusive? No. I'm still, I guess, as some of the Murdoch's papers call me, a card-carrying Democrat, which...
Is there actually a physical card?
Should we talk about Charlie Wilson, or should we talk about the presidential election
thing?
Do you want to talk about Charlie Wilson
or
the presidential campaign?
We have 10 months to talk about the American presidential campaign.
And we'll have 10 minutes or so to tell us about Charlie Wilson, because I sat there thinking, this is an extraordinary story. How is it I didn't know any of it at all?
Yeah, you know, Charlie was on 60 Minutes right when the Russians were about to pull out. He had a 20-minute expose on 60 Minutes, a popular Sunday night news program. It was number one for years. And still, no one has ever – everybody forgets that this existed. When we read George Kreil's book, I said, you couldn't – literally, the classic line is, you couldn't make this up. You couldn't make up an alcoholic, womanizing, skirt-chasing, coke-doing congressman who will walk into a casino – in Las Vegas saying, "Hi, I'm Congressman Charlie Wilson, which way to the hot tub?" I mean, you couldn't write that and have people believe it. And yet there Charlie is, proud as can be of his lifestyle and his achievements.
And he was the drug taking, blah 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 blah. And from Texas. I didn't think they had that kind. They tolerated that sort of thing.
Well,
in Texas.
I asked him how he kept winning. He just saying, "Look, because the opposition were always trying to tear him down because of his lifestyle." He says, "Let the opposition say what they will. I got more done on the Veterans Bill. I did more for Social Security. I've done more for the Highway Bill, the Water Transportation Act." He was just a very effective guy when it came down to backroom dealing.
Put in a nutshell, and then Mark will come in with a very incisive sort of film-orientated question.
I'm getting it together right now.
Yeah. In a nutshell, what is it that the film says that Charlie Wilson did?
Charlie Wilson defeated the Soviet Union.
That's it.
In a nutshell. In a nutshell, that's what he did. He made it possible for the Soviet army to experience a crushing defeat that led to the fall of the Berlin Wall.
But the crucial thing is, from a film point of view, that actually the message of the film is, we'll see. Because the whole thing is that every event that happens, I mean, as the film ends, Charlie Wilson himself is quoted as saying, "We messed up the end game," and the key message is, everything may change next week.
That is true. I think the audience knows that intrinsically. There is something in our DNA that understands that the ball keeps bouncing, that you can look at any time of period in history, and it never comes, and they lived happily ever after. Not every time. There's a few good things that happened. You know, Hitler dead, that was undeniably...
In general, that was undeniably
a good thing. But very rarely does it happen that something gets tied up in a very neat and tidy bow, and there, particularly in the world of you know, international relations. And I don't know if... When has Pakistan/Afghanistan been more volatile? in 2007 or in 1907. It's always been this kind of place that defined a brand of common
sense. But the extraordinary thing about your story is that it's so prescient. Another one of the kind of audible gasps there in the screen 8 the Regal Plaza is when Julia Roberts' character says, "And the president of Pakistan did not kill Bhutto."
How about that?
Well, different president, different Bhutto, but it's the same story.
Isn't it amazing? A relative of it. So when does it stop being fascinating? I actually thought that when I saw the headline of the horrible assassination just recently. I said, we have a movie out here in which our character says, Zia did not kill Bhutto. Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. It's like, does it take place now or did it take place 20 years ago?
So is the general sense that, because I came out of the film thinking that it ends on a very, very downbeat note, because we know just how badly wrong that situation goes. I mean, it leads into 9/11 and everything that's followed on from it. And yet, the primary tone of the movie is upbeat, entertaining. And what I got out of it is that you sympathize with and you like that character. You like Charlie Wilson.
Isn't that fascinating? I think that's cool. I think it's great that here we've been able to make this movie that it has a twisted lesson that comes from it. When I go to the movies, I want to see something that almost leaves me ambivalent. I want to go off and have arguments over what the point of the movie is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be led down with some path, and I see A, B, C, D, and finally you have E, and then you're done with it. I like this movie that when Charlie was given that award, Charlie did it at the end of the movie. It was one of his proudest moments of his life. He was given, first time a civilian was given award by the men and women of the clandestine services. Did you even know the clandestine services gave awards?
No.
I had no idea.
It's like an office party they have.
But everyone who was there realizes that, this is all a matter of when you're in a spot in history, you're in a little dome, you're in a zone, and it exists. But then, as Charlie himself says, that ball keeps on bouncing, and we communicate. I love that we were able to communicate that, just because the people in the audience know
what happened next.
Yeah, know what happens next.
Was he doing the right thing
at the time? Yeah, I don't think there.
He was in the right place at the right time. He's on the right committee so that he could increase the funding from, what was it, 5 million to
it just kept growing and growing. Actually, it eventually became a billion, 500 million from the Americans.
But the electorate didn't know that, did they?
I mean, they did not know that, but being in the United States at that time, every night, every time a story came out about what was going on in Afghanistan, everybody was saying, the plucky Afghans, the freedom-fighting Afghans, these poor underdogs who were taking on the might of the Soviet Union. There wasn't an American or an American politician or anybody who was given over towards the good guy versus bad guy scenario who didn't want those brown people with black, brown and blue eyes wearing those kind of like toga robes with those funny hats. They all wanted them to win against the Soviet Union.
Here's a really tricky question, which we've discussed a few times on the program.
Oh, so you're going to throw me for a loop.
Brace yourself.
All right, I'm holding on.
How great is Philip Seymour Hoffman?
He did that well. He's reeling already.
Thank you. Oh, God.
Deal with that.
Look, I was so afraid of Phil because, I'm like you. I've seen his. I've never met him. I was just in awe of everything he's there. I've seen him on stage. I've seen him on TV. I see him in movies now. And I want to come back. When did you end up in Twister, Phil? I saw Twister last night on TV. What were you doing in that? I thought he was going to come in and be gruff. Angry, maybe a little hungover, and I thought he was going to have just natural contempt for me and Julia. Just by way of what he's just the opposite. He's a delightful teddy bear of a guy. We were shooting in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco, and we literally had to finish a shot in 5 minutes, otherwise he wouldn't be able to get in the car to make the plane to fly home and have his second baby. So he's a pushover. And the 3 days, it was 3 days that we shot that scene where we meet for the first time, Charlie and Gus in the office, and all the girls are coming in.
Very funny scene,
very delightful. And when it was over, I was bummed out, and I told Phil, I said, I wish we could have done this scene for another 4 or 5 days, because this is the only real time that we have to spend a lot together.
One other name that I want to mention, that's Aaron Sorkin, who we know a lot and admire very much over here. How crucial was getting him involved in writing this?
Well, the way this thing happens is you get the book, and everybody finds out that you've bought the rights to the book. Mm. And some people who are inclined to do so read the book, and then they come to you and say, hey, I'd like to write this or I'd like to direct this. Aaron came to us very early on. I said, hey, there's something interesting there, something interesting there. Let me think about it. And then he went away. And because he went away, we begin to hear other people's takes on it. Writers would come in and they'd present this idea, they'd present this way of doing it. And we saw four or five guys who would have killed in order to write it. And we never thought that anybody really nailed what the movie was about or did it in a way that was going to be something beyond a systematic, here's what I, you know, we didn't want to be, we don't want your movie to be medicine or, you know, a civics lesson. We wanted it to be fascinating and funny and surprising. And then Aaron came back about a year and a half later. I said, I've been thinking about it a little more and let me try something here. And so he ended up writing it and we were delighted. We had this thing that read like a house on fire.
It was Truman Capote, wasn't it? That was exactly Truman Capote.
It's not another Truman Capote film.
I take it you've never done interviews with Aaron because he's kind of talks like that.
Can I just say, on a historical level, as somebody who's always loved Splash to pieces, which incidentally Quentin Tarantino can apparently quote from beginning to end.
Is that right?
The Splash is a great area of agreement between me and my daughter. My daughter, who's 9, thinks Splash is one of the greatest movies ever. Do you now look back at those kind of, you know, the comedies that you made back then with anything sort of like, you know, loving nostalgia? Because there was a period in which simple, absolutely insubstantial, beautiful comedies like Splash were kind of the remit.
You know, that was when movies... Splash was made for $11 million. Isn't that amazing? $11 million. Imagine when you could make a movie for $11 million and have helicopters in it, that you could actually make...
and mermaids.
And mermaids. You could actually crank out a variety of different sort of almost, compared to some comedies now, sophisticated in their subject matter, because now comedies are all about teenagers getting laid.
Did we have to see your bottom in this film?
No, you do not. You can go to the bathroom during that. You can go get some popcorn during that scene. But if you want to see a horror movie, if you want to see a scene that is as scary as anything that would be in Saw 2, Saw 3, just wait till I get out of the hot tub in Las Vegas.
It's a fine scene.
I wanted there to be this kind of music. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. As I climb out.
I just assumed it was a stunt butt.
No, it's mine. Mine. I don't prescribe to that.
Okay.
And the ladies had been naked for 4 days.
Yeah, sure.
It was only fair.
They were turning prune-like. Tom, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Very nice of you to join us.
And that was Tom Hanks. His movie is Charlie Wilson's War. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.